We are on the air. All right, here we go. So, one Shiloh was having this week was, are you allowed to make your bed on Shabbos after you wake up? Are you allowed to wash dishes on Shabbos if you don't need them anymore? Right? If you're going to go back into your bed, are you going to need those dishes again? Of course you can. But you're not going to go back in your bed and you're not going to use those dishes again on Shabbos. Are you allowed to wash them and make your bed? So the answer is that it depends why you're washing them. If you're washing them because you want to save work on Matzah Shabbos, or you want your bed to be nice and neat when you get into your bed on Matzah Shabbos, so then you cannot wash them. Hello, Josh. What we're discussing now, the first Shiloh was, are you allowed to wash the dishes or make your bed? If you want to do it because the house should look neat, you don't want dirty dishes around, or you want the bed to look neat, that's fine, because then you're doing it for Shabbos. Then that's not considered achana. But if the only reason why you're doing it is because you want to save time Matzi Shabbos, then you are not allowed to do that. Hello, Yosef. Okay, so that is question number one. So no making bed and no washing dishes for Matzi Shabbos, but for Shabbos, for the way the house should look, that's fine. Second question is, in America, it's more common than in Israel. And since everyone here is from America and is in America, if you're walking on sidewalks in front of houses or areas that will turn a switch, turn a light on the sensor, are you allowed to walk there on Shabbos? Right? So you walk in front of this person's house, and you know when you walk on their sidewalk, boom, the light goes on. So like, if you know about it and you could easily avoid it, I would do it. But the letter of the law would allow it. And the reason is, what you're doing is kilachayat, it's with a shinoi. You're flipping the switch on with your foot. That's not normal. And therefore, it's called a shinoi kilachayat. Second of all, you don't care if the light goes on. It's not your intention, and you don't care. You're not benefiting from it because you have light in the street anyway. If there would be no lights on in the street, if there are no lights on the street, and you need that to see, that's one thing. But you didn't turn it on. You're walking fine in the streets without that. You have all these other houses that don't have it. The reason why they turn it on is for security purposes for themselves. So they themselves would not be allowed to walk there because they're using it to get into their house. But if you're the strangers who're just passing by, you're not benefiting from it. You don't care about it. So then there's definitely room to be lenient. Again, I'm not saying to go start playing hopscotch there and like turning it on every minute. But the idea would be it's the etzem fine. And
wait, how about a baby monitor?
A baby monitor. So the baby is talking into it, not you. Right? You are not talking back to it. The baby is talking into it. And most likely the baby doesn't realize what he's doing. Right, it's a boy. He doesn't realize what he's doing. So my hunch is that it's fine. I'll double check and look into it. Because you're doing zero. It's a different lambda. It's not connected to Shiloh. You're doing nothing. He's doing everything. You set up in advance that the baby should do this without himself knowing. Most likely it's fine, but I wanted to double check that. And then the third Shiloh sent in was, can you use your tefillin boxes to hold open your sitter? Right? Because you have a sitter which keeps closing, it's really annoying, and you don't want to have to hold your hand there the whole time because you're busy waving your hands in the kavanah, so you don't want to have to hold it. Are you allowed to take your tefillin boxes and hold them open? I don't recommend it. And the reason is that tefillin boxes serve kedusha. Tefillin are kadosh, the highest level, whereas a sitter is not kadosh because it's printed, not written, it has a lower level kedusha. And therefore, you're taking something which is set aside for high-level Kedusha and using it for something of lower-level Kedusha. I do not recommend doing that at all. Okay. Those are some random shaylos that I did. Now, let's discuss the big topic of the night, which is kashrus. Okay, so we had part one last week discussing waiting between milk and meat and mixtures with things that are cold. Next week, I hope to discuss two sinks, two ovens, microwaves, countertops, and tefillas kelim, taking them to the mikvah. So that I do not want to discuss this week. This week, I want to discuss the middle topic, which is perhaps the hardest one, which is mixtures through heat. Okay, not if they're cold. If they're cold, we just said separate them if you can. Whenever there's heat involved, so then it's trickier because things are getting mixed in that you don't even see. It's called blios. There are things which are getting absorbed and you can't even see them. So let's start like this. What's considered heat? Heat is not warm. Heat is yatsa letisvo, which is around 110 degrees and up. So at that point, anything under 110 degrees is not considered hot. It's cold, and nothing is getting absorbed. If it's 110 and up, we're worried that perhaps at that point, things are getting absorbed. And therefore, you have to be concerned about bleels. Now, we're going to split this into two conversations. One is when you have what's called mamushes. Mamushes are physical matter, which otherwise known as a real piece of meat and a real piece of milk. What happens when they get mixed up? We're going to discuss when things like pots get mixed up. But when you have two pieces of milk and meat, you drip some milk onto your schnitzel, into your challah, right? You dropped some bread, some fleischig schnitzel crumbs on top of your macaroni and cheese. So these are mamushes. So if it's cold, just separate whatever you think and three. But here, because if one of the two members of this party are hot, you got a problem. Hello, Alex Siegel. So as we're now starting off, when you have a hot mixture, like pieces of meat or milk, one of them is hot going on the other one. So besides what you see, things went a little bit deeper. And therefore, at that point, you need to ask a shiloh like this. If it's going to be 1/60th and whatever you see, you pulled off. And whatever you don't see, the whole thing is less than 1/60th. The ratio is 1/60th or more. So then it's all bottle, it's fine. But let's say the ratio is not 1/60th, it's 1/40th, 1/30th, 1/20th or less. So then it's not bottle. And even if you take out what you see, we have to be concerned that perhaps it went deeper. Then you're going to have to start throwing out a little bit more than just what you see. And therefore, at that point, you should call and ask a shayla, because perhaps you're going to take off a little layer, perhaps a deeper layer, or perhaps you can't fix it at all. It'll depend on the ratios and what the consistencies are. Okay, so that is, now that's a shayla which happens rare, I would say. Happens, but happens rare. I want to move on to the shayla which happens most common, which is pots. Right, you have milk and meat, and you have pots. Okay, this is bleels. We have the pot that have inside the pot, it has things that have been absorbed over the days, over the months, over the years. Now, here, so it's called bleels, we need to split them into two categories. Category number one is ben yomo. Category number two is not the ben yomo. So what's a ben yomo? A ben yomo is something which has had in their hot milk or meat in the last 24 hours. For example, Sunday, 12:30, you warmed up your chicken soup from Shabbos. It's hot. You didn't take it out until Sunday, 1:30 p.m. That is a ben yomo until Monday, 1:30 p.m. But from Monday, 1:31 p.m. and on, that's now called a not ben yomo. It's not a ben yomo. Before the halakhic ramifications, that's just definition. So you have bleels, things that got absorbed into a pot, and they were absorbed in a ben yomo or not a ben yomo. They are, if it's a ben yomo within the last 24 hours, so we're concerned that flavor is still a good flavor. And that flavor, therefore, will be more potent and could affect halachas. Whereas if it's more than a ben yomo, it's an eino ben yomo, so then those flavors are now what's called pugum, bad, and therefore they will not have an impact on food. Okay, so that's just terminology. Bleos was got absorbed, ben yomo pot, not ben yomo pot. Okay, now we're going to split it up. Now, case number one, and from these cases, we will be able to pull out halachas. You have a chicken soup pot, a fleischig pot that had hot fleischig in there in the last 24 hours. It's a fleischig ben yomo. And you cooked up, made macaroni and cheese in that pot. Okay, so it's Sunday, 12:30, you heated up your chicken soup. And you forgot, and Sunday dinner, Sunday 7:30, you waited your 6 hours, you started making macaroni and cheese in that pot. Now, here's where it gets tricky. So now, every shayla we're going to discuss, you have to look at the food and look at the pot. So over here, you made milchik food in a fleischig ben yomo pot. In this case, the food, garbage. You have to throw it out because it got absorbed fleischig then you almost stop into your macaroni and cheese. It's rare that you're going to have 60 times of it in the whole pot. And therefore, that pot, that macaroni and cheese is now garbage. However, the pot, what about the pot? You have just trafed up the pot because now the pot has in there milk and meat in the pot. You need to kasha that pot. How do you kasha the pot? You clean it off well, wait 24 hours. That's not a ben yomo. And then you put it into a bigger pot that has boiling water. That's how you're going to kasha that pot. Fine. So that was when you put the milk into the ben yomo fleishik. Now, what happens if you didn't make macaroni and cheese until two?
Are you waiting 24 hours from when you made the meat or 24 hours from when you made the dairy?
When you made the dairy, when you trafed it out. Wait 24 hours from the time of trafing. Now, part case two, you weren't such a space out. You didn't do it 6 hours after you made the chicken soup. You waited 24 hours. So you had the chicken soup at Sunday, 1:30, took it out, it was hot. You made your macaroni and cheese Monday, 1:30, 1 p.m., Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You made it after 24 hours. So what this is milk going into a not ben yomo fleishik pot. In this case, this is a more common scenario because normal people remember within a few hours. Now this was a day, I made a mistake. What happens now? Here's very tricky. This is a very good riddle you could have for people. In this case, the food is kosher. The pot is treif. A very tricky case. How you get a food being kosher and a pot that's treif. And here's the way it works. Because what happened? The pot is fleishik, not ben yomo. There is no kosher flavor. That was not just kosher. There is no meat flavor anymore that could affect the food after 24 hours. And therefore, that macaroni and cheese did not get affected by the pot. However, the pot got affected by the cheese. You now have real cheese going into this pot. So that means in the walls of this pot, you have both milk and meat flavors. So even though the meat flavor is no longer a viable meat flavor, because this pot has in there both genders, it is a transgender, trigender, bigender pot, get rid of it. Therefore, you need to kasha this pot, wait 24 hours, and then put in boiling water. So this is a tricky case. I'll explain in a second. What we've done so far is you have milchic food, and everything I'm saying now is the same thing, vice versa. But you have a fleishik pot and milchic food, and the same thing if it's a milchic pot of fleishik food. If it's a ben yomo, you have trafed up the food, trafed up the pot. If it's not a ben yomo, you have trafed up the pot, you have not trafed up the food. Definitely do not do lechachila, as we're going to see some more cases. And not something you want to do, because lechachila, you can't do any mixing. But in this case, it won't ruin the food, even though it does ruin the pot. Now, that's one scenario, which comes up 10% of the shilas. Most shilas that come up are in the upcoming case, which is you have a fleishik pot and you cook parv stuff in there. What about using it now for milchik stuff? Okay, the scenario is you have your chicken soup pot and you made rice, you made potatoes, you made noodles, right? Pasta, vegetables, okay? In a fleishik pot, what now can you do with it vis-a-vis milchik? Now again, here also we need to understand it's a ben yomo, not a ben yomo. But a very important thing, which I should have said earlier, I'm going to say now, when we say fleishik pot and ben yomo, not ben yomo, it's only relevant if there's no real meat there. Let's say you didn't wash it thoroughly. You washed your fleishik pot, but there's still some meat grime, certainly a meat piece. Anytime that there's real mamushes of meat, game over. Our whole sugya we're talking about now is where the pot is clean. The pot's not clean and there's real mamushes there. That real mamushes can spread everywhere. But we're talking about now the pot is 100% clean. Now, if it's within 24 hours, is a ben yomo, not 24 hours, not a ben yomo. So now, let's get back to the case. So now, in a fleishik ben yomo pot, you chicken souped at 12:30, 1:30, you're now making vegetables, rice, or pasta Sunday night, 7:30, it's within the ben yomo time period. Can you go ahead and use that rice, potatoes, and vegetables, eat it with cheese? You're gonna go melt cheese on it. Now, if you melt cheese on it in that pot, you will have chafed up the pot, chafed up the food. But you're smarter than that. You take out the pasta, you take out the vegetables and rice and potatoes, and you melt cheese on and out of that pot. Can you do that or not? What you have here is a Ben Yomo pot that cooked vegetables, potatoes, or rice, which is parv, and you now want to put cheese on it. So here's the way this goes. If you eat the potatoes plain and the pasta plain, you're not fleishig. Just because you cooked it in a Ben Yomo pot, it does not make you fleishig. You're still parv. But you cannot lechatchila eat it with milchik. You cannot lechatchila now put cheese on it. Because you cooked it in a Ben Yomo pot, it doesn't make you fleishig, but we treat it as if it has some taste of fleishig in there, called nisein tam. It's got some flavor in there. And you cannot go ahead now and put milk on it. So if you call me then, I'm going to tell you, do not mix it up. But let's say you spaced out or you didn't remember and you put cheese on top of it. Then if you were to call me, the answer is you could eat it. Lechachila, you don't put cheese on these things. But b'di'evet, if you did, it's okay. If you were to put the cheese straight in the fleishig pot, you've ruined everything. But when you take it out of the pot, and it was cooked in a Ben Yomo, don't put cheese on top of it. But if you did, b'di'eved, it's kosher. Now, I want to compare that to the next case, which is the chicken soup pot that's not a Ben Yomo. You have a fleishig pot that's not Ben Yomo. It's now Wednesday night. You haven't used this pot in 24 hours. And you cook pasta, potatoes, rice, vegetables in this part, in this fleishig pot that's not a Ben Yomo. Here, the way it goes like this. This point, for sure, everything is parv. If you eat those pasta, for sure, you're parv. Now, can you go ahead and mix cheese with it? Here's the way this goes. If you call me before you cook that pasta and say, Rabbi, I want to cook pasta in my fleishig pot to melt cheese on it later, the answer is don't. Lechachila, do not cook that pasta in a fleishig, not Ben Yomo pot to eat with cheese. But if you made it already, and then you realize, oh, you don't have anything to eat it with. Oh, I have this pasta, and I want now to melt cheese with it. And that wasn't your initial plan. That's what we're going to call b'di'evet. Now you can go ahead and now mix in cheese with it, l'chachila. So here's the difference. If you cook the pasta in a fleishig Ben Yomo pot, don't eat it with milk. Don't l'chachila mix milk in no matter what. But if you already did, it's kosher. Whereas if you cook the pasta in a not Ben Yomo pot, so here the halacha is, don't cook it lechatchila to mix in with milk. But if you already cooked it and now you have nothing to eat and you want to eat it with pasta, with cheese, then that's fine. Okay, so this is the breakdown. We have the mamashis mixing in with things, separate them, what got absorbed, you're going to have to throw out, a real shiloh. Then you have milk in fleishig pots or vice versa. If it's a Ben Yomo, everything is treif. If it's not a Ben Yomo, food is kosher, pot is treif. If it's par going into a fleishig Ben Yomo, it is still par. Don't eat with milk. If you did mix it up, kosher. Or par going to a not Ben Yomo pot, don't make lechatchila the pasta to eat with milk. But if you already made the pasta, you can now lechatchila go ahead I mix in with milk. Now, this last part of this is, what happens if you don't know if my pot is a Ben Yomo or not? I don't remember. I don't know if I used this pot the last 24 hours. I don't remember. I have a busy kitchen. The rule is, if you don't know, we consider it not a Ben Yomo. So it's called Stam Kalim Einam B'nei Yoman. Most Kalim in your house are not considered Ben Yomo, and therefore, you have the leniencies. Now, one last thing on this one also, the second last thing, is the same thing with silverware. Right, if you go ahead and put a milk spoon and a fleishig spoon in this pot, that silverware will have the same status as the pot. I mean, as we've discussed until now with the pot, which is, if the silverware is Ben Yomo, it will have that impact on the food. If the silverware is not a Ben Yomo, it won't have that impact on the food. So whatever we discussed until now, with the pot being a Ben Yomo or not, well, the same ruling with silverware. If the silverware is dirty, it has real mamashis on there, it's a big problem. If it doesn't have mamashis, it just has blios, what got absorbed into the silverware. So then if it's a Ben Yomo, they will come out and ruin your food. If it's not a Ben Yomo, it will not ruin the food, but it will ruin the silverware. You're going to have to kosher the silverware. Fine. Now, another point over here is Zeya. Zeya is the steam. What status does steam have? So you're making chalent, fleshic chalent, and you have the steam bubbling out. So now, if you put your hand over there and it's not hot, otherwise known as not yasoledes, it's not 110 degrees, then that's nothing. And therefore, if you want to take your salt shaker, your pepper, your garlic, you want to shake it in, even though there's steam coming out, if it's not 110 degrees, there's nothing happening. And therefore, it doesn't affect your salt shaker. If, however, it is 110 degrees, it's hot, you want to do a quick shake and get out, that steam is fleshig, and that steam can be absorbed and affect your salt shaker. So as a general rule, if you want to do shaking over a hot pot, don't. But if you do, hold it high enough, far enough away, that's not in the yatz or lettuce area. Okay, now, as far as fish and meat, can you, right, we do not eat fish and meat together. Are you allowed to cook fish in a meat pot? So now, if there is meat there, or there's grime of meat, the answer is no. If, however, it's a clean pot, you have a clean, fleshic pot. So if it's not a Ben Yomo, of course you can. Even if it's a Ben Yomo, there are those that are machmir, but me'ikar adin, you do not have to be machmir, which means me'ikar adin. You have your chicken soup pot, you took it out at 1:30, you clean it really well. At 1:45, you can go ahead and make fish in that same pot. Because we're not eating them together, it's cleaned out. So even though it's a Ben Yomo, me'ikar adin, it is mutter. Okay, now we'll talk about the onion. The onion is the fancy figure over here that ruins or makes a lot of good shilas. Now here's the way the onion works. What we've been discussing till now is if it's cold and not 24 hours, there's almost nothing to worry about. However, the onion could change the game. Now, the onion is, we're using as a code word for davar charif. Davar charif means something which is spicy, hot tamale, a hot pepper. So onion is the most common one. It may apply to radishes, it may apply to garlic, perhaps hot peppers, but onions is the most common one. Now here's the way this works. It is a machlokis if onions are considered charif, if onions are considered spicy and hot. So if you hold they're not, no problem. It's like cutting vegetables. But we're machmir to treat onions as if they are charif, as if they are something which is spicy. Now here's the status. If you take a fleishig knife, clean, not Ben Yomo fleishig knife, and you cut up an onion with it, because we're considering this charif, a davar charif can extract good flavor from a knife through cutting, even if it's not a Ben Yomo and even if it's clean. And therefore, when you cut that onion with a fleishig knife, right, when you cut the onion with a fleishig knife, what you may be doing is extracting fleishig flavor into your knife, into your onion. Now, at this point is where we highly recommend having a parve knife, an onion knife, completely separate, and therefore your onions will always stay parve. You can do whatever you want with them. That's great. But in the event you don't do that, or you didn't do that, so if you cut your onion with a fleishig knife or with your milchig knife, you now have to treat that onion as milchig or fleishig. Now, what does that mean? If you eat that onion yourself, you take a piece now, eat that onion, it does not make you fleishig. That onion does not make you fleishig. But if you, it doesn't make you fleishig, and therefore if you are fleishig and you want to eat an onion, you want to eat an onion that was made, that was cut with a milchig knife, you could eat that. The onion itself isn't milchig, isn't fleishig. Therefore, if you are fleishig, you can eat the onion if you. Where it comes up is cooking it in the other pot, in the other pots, or eating it with the other food. For example, you slice an onion with a fleishig knife, clean fleishig knife. You cannot eat that onion on your cream cheese sandwich. Even though there's no heat, there's no mamashes. You can't take that onion now and eat it with your cream cheese sandwich. Also, let's say you cut it with a milchig knife. You cannot go ahead and use that onion in your fleishig pots, in your fleishig food, because you will be extracting the flavor when you do that, OK? Okay, and that's why it's highly recommended keep everything separate. If you mixed up, there are kulas, there are heterim, but it's very case specific, and therefore you're gonna have to ask the shayla. Okay, but in general, if you keep them apart, do whatever you like with it. If you cut an onion with a fleishig knife, keep it fleishig. Milking knife, keep it milking. If you mixed up, call a local Orthodox rabbi. While we're on the onion topic, onions that were cut and are exposed, they're out of the peel, cannot be left overnight. They have to be, if you're going to leave them overnight, you need to salt them. You need to salt them or mix them with oil, have them cook them. But a raw onion that's unpeeled, a raw onion that's peeled, a raw onion that is peeled cannot be left out overnight or in the refrigerator overnight. It has to be kept separate. Sorry, it's not the right word. It has to be salted. You have to treat it. This is because it's spooky stuff, sakana, and therefore, if you have an onion that's not going to be finished and it's raw, salt it or mix it with oil. Same thing applies to garlic. Same thing applies to eggs. If you have eggs that are either peeled, hard-boiled eggs, or raw eggs, they cannot be left overnight. You have to salt them, mix them with oil, and it is an issue of sakana. While we're on the egg topic, you should check your eggs to see if there's blood. However, if you're getting non-organic eggs, these eggs cannot and have not been fertilized. There's no real issue. And therefore, if you forget to check a regular egg that you buy in the store, it doesn't ruin the food. If you want your kid to check them, you can trust like even a katan to check the egg. If you do find red in the egg, all you need to do is pull out that red and the rest is fine. This is all because these are eggs which we consider not possibly fertilized. And therefore, it's a minhag to check them and pull out the red if you see it. But if you forgot or you cooked it anyway, it's fine. If you're getting the organic eggs, then there's a real issue. Then if you find red, you should throw it out because that may be an embryo of some sort. Okay, so that is a wrap on part two of Kashrus and Mishnah. Next week, part three, which we'll be discussing onions, microwaves, dishwashers perhaps, countertops, and tefillas kelim. Okay, now move on to a few things about bitachon, tefillah, and the parsha. So in the Chayvus HaLevavos, we're getting closer to the end of the psicha. And so we've discussed until now, Chayvus HaLevavos, how your life will be a different life if you have a high level of bitachon. You will not be worried about parnasa, worried about friends, worried about sicknesses. He adds on, and also will be good for you in Olam Haba. That he says, the lesson is that bitachon will take you in this world and the next world. You'll have an escort. In this world, you'll be walking with your bitachon, having a happier, healthier life. Perhaps he even says, you're even going to get earned kavod in the eyes of people. You see by Avraham Avinu, by Lot, even he says that people respected them for their high level of bitachon. So that's something which will be a reward in this world for bitachon. But also he says there will be a high level of reward for you in the next world. Then another thing he adds is how if you have bitachon, you will look at money differently. Meaning you'll be able to view money as a pikadon. Pikadon means you're just guarding it. And if you lack in bitachon, so then the money is something which you own, you earn, you're in control of, and therefore anything, it could take you astray. You could run after your money and buy your Lamborghini. You could go ahead and be a miser with it. You could go ahead and worry all day and night about it. If you realize, if you have a high level of bitachon, all the money you have is a bikadon. Hashem placed it by you. He could take it away when he wants. And it's your job to use it in accordance of how the owner, the real owner, would like it. You most likely will not be buying your Lamborghinis. You most likely will be able to give it away freely to the right causes. And if chas v'shalom, it gets taken away from you, it will have less of an impact on you because it really wasn't yours in the first place. If I am watching someone's Lamborghini and then the owner comes and takes away from me, I'm not going to mourn about it. So if he says, if you have a higher level of bitachon, you'll be able to internalize that. All right, in Hilchos Tefillah, Kavana for Tefillah. So we discussed last week, Mitzvah Srikas Kavana. And therefore, when you're saying Shema, specifically in all mitzvahs, but Shema, you need to come in and say, I'm saying Shema for the mitzvah. The whole Shema, all 248 words, you don't need a specific Kavana, but it's a general, I'm saying Shema for the mitzvah. Great. Now we discuss, Shulchan Aruch discusses in Siman Samach, Sif Hei, what high-level Kavana do you need as far as knowing what the words mean? So you said like this, there are 248 words. For six of those words, you need to know what it means. The first pasuk, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That is it. That is required. You have to know what they mean, which is, Hear, O Israel, Hashem, listen, B'nai Yisrael, Hashem, which he says, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, Elokeinu, the All-Powerful, is one. Which means you're doing Kabbalas Olmahu Shemayim, you're accepting Hashem is the ruler over you, you're accepting his yoke, and you are accepting and recognizing the oneness, the yichud of Hashem, the oneness. There's no other one, there's no partner. It's not like a team in Shemayim, it's one. So this Kavana is Ma'akev in Shema. So you need to know that you're doing a mitzvah for the whole Shema. And for six words, you need to know what they mean and the depth behind it. The other 242 words, even though perhaps it's recommended to know what you're saying, but it's not ma'akev, the mitzvah, if you do not. Okay, that is kavana in tefillah. Now, moving on to the parasha. This week's parasha is Parshas Vayetze. So I want to focus on the beginning of the parasha first, which has the stones. Now, there's two stone episodes, right? The first one is where Yaakov went to sleep and put stones around his head. What was he doing? Right, he's going to protect himself. Now, what was he protecting himself from? Right, lions, tigers, and bears or robbers will not really be terrified by some pebbles around his head. So what was he doing? That's one stone issue. Another one is with the be'er, the well. Right, later on, he went to the well and all the shepherds were waiting because there was this boulder on top of the well and they couldn't take it off. And he took it off. What's the significance of that? What's going on over there in that story? So I think both of them lead us to a certain direction, which is, we discussed hashtalos. When should you do it? When should you not work? What's going on with hashtalos? Your level of, I'm going to do what I can. Here you see from both angles. He wanted to protect himself. Now, he didn't have a gun. He didn't have a shomer. He didn't have a fortress that he could sleep in. He did whatever he could. In the eyes of Hashem, whatever we do anyway is never really enough. It's always only if Hashem wants it to work and not work. So good, he did whatever he could. That was his level of stylus. That was the most he could do to protect himself. He put pebbles around his head. Good, that's your only chiyuv. Your only chiyuv is to do whatever you can. And Hashem will take over the rest. The same thing by this boulder, right? His job was, listen, I want to get water. I want to get this boulder off. It's impossible. There's nothing that's impossible. You do your stylus. He went ahead, tried it, boom, popped off like a bottle cap. Both of these are sending the same message. There's nothing which is impossible. It's never impossible to do anything. If you understand that you can't do it by yourself, you don't need heavenly help, you could do anything. If you think everything's in your control, then you can't do anything. It's whatever's going to happen anyways from Hashem. And these are the two stories which kind of show that message in both directions. Nothing is impossible ever. Now, jump to the end of the parasha. We see another similar idea, which is, Yaakov finished 20 years of service in Laban's house. It was time to go home. He did not go straight home. He waited for 2 years before going home. He left Laban's house and he camped down on the road for 2 years, a year and a half here and 6 months somewhere else. Why did he do that? First of all, and second of all, he got punished for it. Dina was taken away from him in next week's parasha, and Yosef was stayed away from him an extra 2 years. He got punished. Why did he get punished? What was he doing? So it's a good question. I'll put out there something I'm thinking, which is, he spent 20 years in Laban's house. He was not perhaps on the highest level. He thought maybe he wasn't fit to go home to Yitzchak, his saintly father. In the beginning of Parsha, he dreams of Malachim. After being yeshiva, holy dreams of Malachim. At the end of Parsha, he dreams about sheep, speckled sheep and spotted sheep. Perhaps his level had dipped a little bit. He thought maybe I'm not fit to go back to my saintly father Yitzchak. He wanted to take 2 years off to regain control over his ruchnias, be able to be fit to go to his father, perhaps. But still he was punished. Maybe the message here we see is there's no such thing as, I can't go there, I'm not holy enough. No, go. Don't think that you can't do this even in ruchnias. You want to go to your father? Go to your father. He's holier than me, I don't care. You want to try that yeshiva, that harusa? Do it. So perhaps we see from the Gemara Parsha, when it comes to gashmias, there's nothing that's impossible, do it. At the end also, by Ruchnias, there's nothing that's impossible. Just do it. And perhaps that was the mistake that Yaakov made. Have a very good Shabbos. And we'll see you next week. Part 3 of Kashrus.